It's a dream of many handy people to have a space at home where they can work on projects and build things, but it is just a dream for many of us, especially when boxes of kitchen supplies and books take over the corner of the garage we thought would make a good workshop. Maker spaces take the workshop concept out of the garage and move it into a shared space where people who are inclined to make things have shared tools and materials at their disposal. Several communities around the region are talking about maker spaces, either because they exist now or because they're envisioned. There is one already in Portland called ADX. That is the co-creation of Kelly Roy, who's one of our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Tyler Hendrickson's with us as well. He has an existing maker space called One Shop in Reading. He's the founder of that. Tyler, thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you.
And in the future tense, we have Stuart Cole, who's the Community Development Director for the City of Roseburg on the line, which is looking into a makerspace. Stuart, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the existing makerspaces. Kelly, tell us about the making of ADX.
Great. Well, we have been operating. We're actually going to be celebrating our sixth birthday this Saturday, June 10th, from 12 to 8. Everybody's welcome to come out and join us and get a look at the space. And we actually recently expanded and got another 10,000 square feet right next door. So we are now a 30,000 square foot facility located in the heart of the Central East Side Industrial District. And we have a complete wood shop, metal shop, some electronics, 3D printer, laser engraver, screen printing, jewelry making. And if we don't have it under our roof, we've got partners all around the region who we direct our members to. So we have a lot of partner member exchanges that we do for glass, ceramics, photography.
You do start from an art point of view. In fact, ADX is for Art Design PDX, isn't it?
Yeah, Art Design Portland. So it's a play on PDX. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so
Let me
bring Tyler in here because I want to hear about the creation of One Shop. And you come at this not from an artistic, there's art in what you do. You are an architect. But tell us about how you created One Shop.
Yes. Okay, so I moved here about 3 years ago from Arkansas. I'm a practicing architect. And there I had a large warehouse from the university. And because I graduated there, they let me use their warehouse, which was pretty much a makerspace in its own. It has CNC routers, plasma cutters, full wood shop, full metal shop, and we would do things on a larger scale like pavilions. When I moved here, I moved into a house without a garage, and I realized that there was other people in that same position, and so we opened up the shop to share our tools, our computers, our software. We too have 3D printers, laser cutters, CNC routers and plasma cutters, a wood shop, an art studio, and a print room, much like Kelly. And so the idea is that there's other people out there that don't have a space. Maybe they have a single project and don't want to go out and buy an expensive piece of equipment to produce it. And so they can come into our shop and use our stuff.
All right, so this obviously cropped up from a need you felt within yourself. Stuart Cole, as the Community Development Director in Roseburg, I wonder what advantage the city sees in pursuing the idea of a makerspace.
Oh, we certainly see the advantage when you take a look at makerspaces that are successful like Kelly and Tyler's. We're in the process of partnering with a couple other groups to have a study completed for our area to say, you know, what type of makerspace would best fit Roseburg and Douglas County. We've kind of discovered that there's no one-size-fits-all type of makerspace, so that's really the crux of why we're having the study completed, is to see, you know, if we're trying to promote a makerspace, how will that operate, how will it function, and what type of equipment would go in there, and how large would that be? Is it 5,000 square feet or is it 25,000 square feet? And what would be the most appropriate space here? But we're certainly see the value in having it to be able to kind of spur residents to gain new skills, start businesses, and support economic activity in Roseburg and greater Douglas County.
And have you or other city staff been visiting existing makerspaces to get a sense of what they look like and what goes on there?
You know, some of our other partners have. So they certainly are, we're partnering with a different agency that has taken a look at saying, hey, we'll perform this study for you, but are certainly looking at business models that would be successful in an area like this where we have about 22,000 people in our city, and how it would operate. Is it going to be a nonprofit or for-profit type of venture or some type of combination of both, and looking to try to model it after one of these other existing successful maker spaces, but make it an appropriate size and try to make it successful for this location.
Let me remind our listeners, we're talking about maker spaces here on the Jefferson Exchange. Stuart Cole is the Community Development Director in the city of Roseburg. We also have Tyler Hendrickson from One Shop in Redding and Kelly Roy from ADX in Portland. So, Kelly, when you started 6 years ago, did you think it was going to be an ongoing thing, or was there some doubt about long-term viability?
Well, certainly it was a risk. I looked at other models around the country and really developed, I've been working on the business model over the last 6 years, and we actually think we've found a model that's worked really well. And we're actually working with the city of Astoria. We're working with some private folks there to get a makerspace off the ground in Astoria. So we're also exploring what it looks like to open these in smaller communities. But we are now a million-dollar company with 15 full-time employees and another 30 part-time employees. And we do, our business model is very much a blend of nonprofit and for-profit. Although we're officially structured as an LLC, all of the profits that are generated go back into the company to provide more programming and services for the community. So we feel like we have a flexible model that allows us to be adaptable, but also a model that provides like a valuable community service for growing our economy. Because when we started back in 2011, our unemployment rate was, you know, hovering over around 10%. And so as we've seen Portland kind of recover from that, you know, we've had a chance to be a part of that economic stimulation by growing businesses out of the space and hiring more people as a company ourselves. So
I'm still curious about the business model, though. I mean, so do you charge people membership to come to ADX, or do they get charged for certain services there, or time on the machines, or what?
Yeah, we have three different revenue streams. We have membership, classes, and then the third stream is very rare for a makerspace, but I really think it's kind of the secret sauce for the business model is our in-house design and fabrication. So we have employees that are on our design and fabrication team that take on client work, and we have clients all over the country that we work with, and some of our biggest clients are brewers who are craft brewers who are growing and scaling themselves, and they need more tap handles as they reach into new markets. So we are now in production of, you know, about 2,000 tap handles for Frame Brewery in Hood River and same amount for Bowie and Astoria. So
sort of like a small-scale contract factory.
Yeah, basically we do small batch manufacturing, which is, you know, hard to find anymore. The volumes of things that want to be produced, sometimes there are limits to that with different contractors. So we've been able to fill a niche, and then we also are able to provide that service for the companies that are scaling within ADX as they're ready to go into production. We can help them do that.
Tyler Hendrickson at One Shop in Redding, what's the model there? How do you manage to keep the doors open at One Shop?
So, like Kelly, we have different revenue streams, too. And so members are kind of our community service. And really, it's taking architecture projects that helps keep the doors open. But we also do other things. We help small businesses do prototyping, too. And then I also do design projects that filter through One Shop and become fabrication and build projects. One thing we're really excited about is we're trying to start a design build where we'll work with students in, on the high school and college level and do a semester of design and then a semester of building and produce real projects around town. And we hope to do one of those a year. So we're starting to scale up. But yeah, there's different ways, and you kind of have to find what's working and what's not. Classes we wish we were more successful with, but we've kind of filtered it to we can get a lot more hands-on time when people just sign up. And our members really help teach other members new things. So.
And what does a membership cost in One Shop, for example?
We have all kinds of different membership packages. So one of the big fights when starting a makerspace was insurance and what ages could come in. Our youngest member is 13. Our oldest is 74. And so what we do is we give free memberships to minors 13 and under, discounted memberships to minors 14 through 18. But then adult memberships are $100 a month. And so there's different ways, quarterly packages. There's all kinds of different ways to get into One Shop.
I wonder, Tyler, about one particular thing I read on the One Shop website, which is you saying I have a romantic relationship with software. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So computers, right? They do what you want them to do. They don't talk back, and they make you capable of doing things that you couldn't do by hand. And so it's this relationship with the computer versus people that I'm starting to find alluring. And so we're coming into this world where we're all into our phones and our tablets and our laptops, and you can start to see a separation of people. And so that's the beauty of the makerspace, is we can start to relate digitally with this equipment and this technology and today's age. But we can also start to relate with each other because we're right next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, making things and inspiring each other. And it kind of brings this physicality together, but allows us to approach things digitally.
Makerspaces, correct me if I'm wrong, actually arose about the same time we started talking about shared office spaces, where people who are telecommuting, that sort of thing, actually get offices together. So even though they're working on different things, they are working shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, some of the models that I looked at were, 10, 15 years old when I started 6 years ago. So makerspaces aren't anything new. I think it's just the terminology and the language around it.
Mm-hmm.
Community workshops. I was looking at a place in Providence, Rhode Island called the Steel Yard. They do a lot of stuff with kids. So there are actual spaces that have been around for 15, 20 years at this point. So it's definitely not anything.
Makerspace is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. That's Kelly Roy from ADX in Portland. You heard Tyler Hendrickson from One Shop in Reading. Stuart Cole is the Community Development Director in Roseburg. Is there something of a checklist now, Stuart, the things that are expected in any makerspace? I've heard wood shop, metal shop, 3D printer. These seem to be some of the real basics any makerspace is expected to have.
Yeah, that's really what we're trying to accomplish from our study, is what type of tools and equipment would be most appropriate for a successful makerspace here in our city. I kind of look at these as almost like a business incubator or a business accelerator, in that what we were finding is that there are people that are doing things out of their homes to promote, entrepreneurship or a small type of business. But as they grow, they're looking for a larger space. And an example is, an individual that was doing some baked goods out of their kitchen. They started to grow this business. It was too large for the kitchen. And then they said, hey, we need to rent some commercial kitchen space. And unfortunately, there just wasn't any available. So they had to move away in order to be able to say, yeah, we're making that next step. So we're looking to say, okay, well, what kind of types of things do we need in a makerspace so that someone can say, I can continue to grow that business here, right in Roseburg or kind of the greater Douglas County area, and we can get them to stay and get them to continue to grow and be successful in our area.
Wow, so potentially everything from metal lathes to large-scale industrial ovens. We have a question here from Boyd in Wolf Creek, and I'll direct this to you, Kelly. He asks, are industrial sewing machines part of the tools available? Have any textile products been scaled and sold in volume?
Yeah, actually, we last September, as our first part of our expansion, we partnered with the Portland Apparel Lab to get them open on campus. They're right next door on Southeast 11th, and they are basically an ADX for soft goods. So all of the industrial machines, buttonhole machines that you would need in order to take a product from prototype into production. So that space has been up and running now for about 9 months. So, yeah, and then on the culinary front, which is interesting, that's been coming up a lot in some more of the rural areas, is, being able to access culinary equipment. And we partner with a company called Kitchen Crew here in Portland that provides exactly that. It's basically an ADX for the culinary world. So all of the ovens and stoves and pots and pans and equipment that you would need to test and prototype a product or a restaurant concept. And Jacobs and Salt has come out of there, and a lot of other great products and restaurants. So it's a great incubator.
Tyler Hendrickson, do you think that the maker spaces are on the rise in part because of the idea of the shared economy, that not everybody needs to own a lawnmower, not everybody needs to own a car and so forth?
Yes, you see people downsizing, houses are becoming tiny houses. People are living in shipping containers. And so we're starting to reduce our scale in living and operations. And so there's just an economy to share spaces and share equipment that you're starting to see. And we're seeing maker spaces pop up in smaller and smaller locations. It used to be a real urban idea, but now we're seeing it in more rural communities.
I know even the city of Talent, where I live, 6,000 people population, is working on a makerspace itself. So a very similar story to what's going on in Roseburg with Stuart Cole, the community development director, working with some partners and trying to get a makerspace developed there. Tyler Hendrickson is with One Shop in Reading. Kelly Roy from ADX in Portland, thank you all for joining us to talk about makerspaces here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.